This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Golhatkar. You can watch this show on Free Speech TV nationwide and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates. North Korea's testing of an intercontinental ballistic missile on Tuesday set off yet another flurry of speculation about ratcheting tensions with the U.S. Kim Jong-un's regime described the missile as being capable of hitting Alaska. While the U.S. has had various strategies in place to combat nuclear and conventional threats from North Korea, under President Donald Trump, there is incoherence. Initially, Mr. Trump pushed China to exert its limited control over North Korea. Now he is intent on Chinese sanctions instead. But any U.S. strike against North Korea will likely result in massive retaliation against neighboring U.S. ally South Korea, as well as other regional nations. Should the current situation be viewed through the lens of two unstable leaders of well-armed nations dangerously facing off against one another? Joining me to help answer that question is Tim Shorrock. He is a Washington-based journalist who spent part of his youth in South Korea. He's been writing about North and South Korea since the late 70s. He's just returned from a two-month stay in Gwangju, South Korea, where during the Korean presidential campaign, he interviewed South Korea's President Moon Jae-in. He writes about U.S.-Korea relations for The Nation and the Korea Center for Investigative Reporting. Welcome to the program, Tim.
Thank you very much.
So first, what do you make of this missile test? It happened on the 4th of July. They're claiming it's capable of hitting Alaska. Is this a significant improvement, if you will, to North Korea's weapons capabilities?
Well, first of all, it's entirely expected. They've said they're testing their missiles, and they're going to continue testing them until they reach the capability that they desire. So it's no surprise that they did this. Second, exactly what this missile was is still yet to be determined. I think the North Korean side actually exaggerated the importance of this launch a little bit by saying it could reach the United States. The Pentagon actually, in its official statements, has said it was this kind of two-stage missile that they have not seen before. They also said that the capability is still very limited. And they noted in particular that North Korea has yet to demonstrate a successful reentry vehicle or the ability to place a warhead, nuclear warhead, on such a weapon. So I think, you know, we're not in any kind of like existential state now where we're in a state of war, but they're testing. This was only a test and they're moving toward this capability, but I think they're still quite a ways away from having that kind of, you know, threat to the U.S. mainland or American bases in Japan and so on.
So our fears then of North Korean reach of the United States, are they overblown?
Yes, I do think they're a little bit overblown, but there's no doubt what North Korea is doing. It's made no secret of its plans. We already know it has nuclear weapons. It's tested five of them, and they're now trying to develop, you know, missile capability to carry those weapons. And they've said this is part of their national plan. And so, like I said before, it's no surprise. So I think, you know, what's really critical at this point is the media here in the United States is just kind of going wild over this, like, you know, they've crossed the red line and, you know, crossed the Rubicon and so on. But I mean, I think the question is to focus on not so much the technical capabilities of these missiles, but how an agreement could be reached to end this crisis. I think that's the key issue here. Mm-hmm. And I think there are already some proposals out there that are very much worth the United States and South Korea looking at. To see how this situation could be ended and there could be some semblance of peace on the Korean Peninsula.
Vincent Brooks, who's the general heading U.S. troops in South Korea, said that all that is preventing or keeping the U.S. and South Korea from going to war with the North is, quote, self-restraint. Is that a bit of a veiled threat?
It's a bit of a veiled threat, and I think it's got to be understood in the context of the fact that the United States has operational control over the Korean military in times of war. This is the only country in the world where a foreign general is in that kind of situation. Hmm. And I actually think that's a very dangerous statement to make, because the South Korean leadership has not made any kind of statement like that. Instead, today, Moon Jae-in, the president of South Korea, made another proposal, you know, to have negotiations, and stress that this launch underscores the importance of trying to have talks that could lead to a settlement of the crisis on the Korean Peninsula. So, yes, I do believe that that was a little overstepping the bounds of what the United States should be saying in this situation.
And of course, with U.S. troops so present, so close to North Korea, many would argue that in many ways the U.S. provokes these kinds of belligerent responses from North Korea. Would you agree?
Well, I think that the U.S.-South Korean combined military exercises that they hold every year, several times a year, are certainly a provocation and certainly seen by the North Koreans as a threat. I mean, after all, these are the largest military exercises in the world that take place, you know, constantly. And, you know, in the last series of exercises, the U.S. actually brought in SEAL Team 6, which is the team that, you know, assassinated Osama bin Laden. And they participated in these exercises to do a kind of practice run of what they call decapitation of the North Korean leadership. In other words, going in there and assassinating Kim Jong-un and his top leadership. So, you know, I think the North Koreans, you know, obviously see that as threatening. And so while the U.S. sees the developments of its missiles and nuclear weapons as threatening, the North Koreans, you know, see the U.S.-South Korean military maneuvers in the same light. And so what can be done to resolve that, I think, is the real question here. There's been proposals floated by China and Russia and talked about extensively in South Korea. And this was actually discussed last week when Moon Jae-in was visiting President Trump, which would be to have some kind of mutual freeze where North Korea agreed to freeze its missile and nuclear testing. And in response, the U.S. and South Korea would freeze or scale down these military exercises. I'm not sure how practical that trade-off is right now, given the fact that they've done this other test, but it's certainly something that should be looked at, and it's certainly something that is being looked at, you know, here in Washington. And I think that another issue here is that, you know, today I've been watching CNN a lot, and I think they've really exaggerated the importance of this test as well. And they keep saying on the screen below them that, you know, North Korea says it refuses to negotiate its nuclear weapons. Well, North Korea has said again and again that they're not going to negotiate away their weapon capability and their defensive capability. However, they do say in this statement, which the CNN is quoting from, they left out a very important first part of the North Korean declaration, which is that unless a fundamental end is put to the U.S. hostile policy toward North Korea and the nuclear threat, North Korea will never put the nuke and ballistic rocket on the negotiating table. So I think, you know, there's a little bit of room for ending this hostile policy. And I think if there's some way that the United States can communicate directly to them about ending a hostile policy, about scaling down, you know, the military confrontation, that there may be a way to start negotiating on this issue.
Tim, let's discuss, much as I hate to, Trump's tweets on the matter. He tweeted on the 3rd of July, North Korea has just launched another missile. Does this guy have anything better to do with his life? Hard to believe that South Korea and Japan will put up with this much longer. He tweeted, perhaps China will put a heavy move on North Korea and end this nonsense once and for all. So foreign policy via tweet is what we're down to here in the United States. Can you decipher this?
Well, it is kind of ridiculous, and you have to wonder what Trump has to do with his time. since he,
Exactly.
knowing the things he puts out at 3 or 4 in the morning, attacking women journalists and all kinds of things. But that aside, I think, first of all, obviously South Korea is dealing with this and has made statements about it and is trying to analyze how it can best respond. But, playing the China card, I mean, that game is over. I mean, China does not have the influence over North Korea that Trump and many other U.S. policymakers think it has. There's actually, quite a bit of animosity between North Korea and China now. I mean, the Chinese have actually, endorsed and actually practiced many of the sanctions that have been imposed by the international community, the UN, such as stopping, coal shipments and cutting off certain kinds of exports to North Korea and imports from North Korea. So, they're doing what they can, but the Chinese also have their own interests, which is they do not want to have some kind of, regime change in North Korea where the United States installs a, government that's friendly to the United States and suddenly China has U.S. Military forces on its border. That's not something China's interested in. And so, China has made some pretty decent negotiating proposals. And I think, the time for, bluster and threats is over. I mean, the time for negotiations is now. And, so let me add one more thing here, because just before Moon Jae-in arrived here, a group of former U.S. Secretaries of Defense and Secretaries of State, including William Perry, who almost went to war with North Korea in 1994 as Bill Clinton's Secretary of Defense, wrote to Trump and said, basically, please, please negotiate with North Korea. This is the only way to avert a war. And I think, Trump's got to listen to these kinds of people and figure out a strategy for approaching North Korea on some kind of deal that would bring them to the negotiating table.
So, Tim, given the instability of the leaders in both North Korea and the United States, and given the provocative statements by the U.S. general in South Korea, if there were to be what some say a, quote, surgical strike, which sounds like a euphemism, what could the fallout be? North Korea does have conventional weapons, even if it doesn't have nuclear weapons capable of targeting the U.S. just yet. It has a lot of conventional weapons and is perfectly capable of inflicting huge damage on South Korea and other countries, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, a war is just unthinkable. It would be a catastrophe. There, as all American military planners know, and North Korea has hundreds of thousands of artillery pieces all along the border with South Korea. And, Seoul is just 30 miles south of the DMZ.
Wow.
And so with its conventional artillery, it could destroy, Seoul in a matter of minutes, probably. And, as well as, it has the capability to launch, missiles with other kinds of weapons on them that could hit U.S. forces in Korea and U.S. forces in Japan and Okinawa. So, I mean, a war would be terrible. I mean, you could have 1 million people die in a few days there. And so I think, that's the real issue here is like, South Korea suffered a terrible, terrible war from 1950 to 1953. 3 to 4 million Koreans were killed in that war. It was just a terrible conflict that's few people here really understand how deeply it affected the North Korean leadership as they look at the United States. And during that war, the United States completely bombed North Korea to the point that there was no targets left. I mean, it was left in a pile of cinders, basically. And so we want to avoid that. And I think that people in America who've had experience negotiating with North Korea, and military people as well who've had experience, serving there and being in the Army or being in other parts of the U.S. military in Korea, the Air Force, for example, they know the experience that happened during the Korean War. They know how many Americans were killed. I mean, thousands of Americans were trapped in North Korea, in 1950, Marines, so many died, and a war where there would just, I mean, it's hard to imagine how terrible it would be. And I think that that's what's needed to be avoided. And this talk of war, especially by the U.S. media, and the blithe way that they talk about how a U.S. could carry out a surgical attack is just, I think it's just criminal. I mean, I think we've got to really approach this as, you know, what about the Korean people, yeah, North and South?
Well, Tim, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We didn't even get to talk about what North Korean ordinary people are suffering for many, many years. I'm sure we'll have you back on again in the future. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
My guest is Tim Shorrock. He is a Washington-based journalist who writes about U.S.-Korea relations for The Nation and the Korea Center for Investigative Reporting. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.